We are on our way to Pentecost. Jewish tradition says that it's the day that the Ten Commandments were given. We know the Ten Commandments were given. We don't know exactly that it was that day, but that's the tradition. But let's look at all that happened to Israel between the time of Passover and Pentecost, if Pentecost was the giving of the law. They saw the destruction of Egypt by the plagues. The Israelites learned during that time, they learned all the trades of Egypt. They made the bricks. They probably were responsible for building the buildings. They did. They were slaves. They were the servants. They were the builders. They were the makers. They were taking care of the gardens. They were taking care of the other things. They were probably planting the gardens and harvesting them. They had all the trades. They had learned the trades. They were skilled in the crafts of building and husbandry, farming, gardening, and so on. All they had to do now, they leave Egypt. And the first one of the first stops, you know, is after leaving Egypt, and they go here and they go there. They finally come to Mount Sinai and they receive the laws. Now you might think it was kind of simple that you would give these people a law saying you shouldn't steal. Because, you know, in most cultures, it's kind of obvious. But they had been in Egypt. Egypt had such rotten, filthy, degrading behaviors that they had to be given the laws again. First of all, you're not to have any more gods. You know, Egypt worshipped every kind of thing. They worshipped flies for gods. They worship beetles for gods. They worship this. They made things in the form of every kind of thing and worshiped it. They thought this was a god and they would worship things. And so God said, I don't want you having any gods in addition to me. No, I'm it. No, nothing physical. And don't make for yourselves any image. Don't bow down to an image. Don't serve it. You serve me. And then he says, you know, he goes on. Finally, he told them this, you know, the fourth commandment, what it is, what we believe the fourth commandment is. What? Remember the Sabbath. Now, why was he telling them to remember it? Because he showed them the Sabbath. You know, he had to show them that. I'm going to show you which day is the Sabbath. I want you to remember it. I'm going to teach you that. And so it was to remember the Sabbath. And then they had to think, no adultery, no stealing, no murder. You shall not murder, not the word kill. It's not kill. It's you shall not murder another fellow. Because, you know, if you say the word kill, which many translations do, and especially the King James goes way back where it says you shall not kill. Well, if you kill a cow, if you kill a lamb, if you're killing somebody, if you kill in war, we can't go killing. That's not what it said. It's you shall not murder a fellow citizen. You shall not murder. So they had all of these. Now, here they come. They're coming out of Egypt. And God's going to take them. That took a while. How far do you think about 600,000 people with little kids, with animals? You know, there's 600,000, as you said, men of war and all that. And they're coming out. You know, some of them really knew how to do well because Egypt wanted to fight with other places. They probably employed some of these people to do fighting for them. They were men of war. They were men of skill. They were men of crafts. How far do you think they could get in a day? 600,000 people picking up your camp, taking your animals, getting the little kids, getting old people, and why? How fast do you think they could walk? You think you could walk about 3 miles an hour? I don't think they can make 3 miles an hour. You ever walk? Try get on a treadmill and put it up to 3 miles an hour. See if you can keep that up. Or 3.5 miles an hour. See if you can keep that up for very long. That's really moving along. Okay, 5 miles an hour walk is you'll be sweating before you get to the end of the block. If you tried to walk 5 miles an hour, most people can't walk that fast without falling down. Okay, so here they are. They're going to go to the promised land. Finally, God gets them there. That original group gets coming up to the promised land. And what does God say? I want to show you, this is in the book of Numbers, chapter 13. It's a fantastic story, and it's a story that has great psychological and mental understandings of the human nature, of the way our minds work. The Eternal spoke to Moses, this is in chapter 13. He said, you know, I want you to send out for yourself men that may spy. Here they come, they're coming up to the place. There's the land. Go send spies into this land. He said, I want you to go and send spies into the land. Now this is, why did God do that? Why would God do that? It's a test of faith. I want you to spy out the land. I want you to send spies in the land, the land of Canaan, which I'm going to give you to the sons. I'm giving to the sons of Israel. You shall send a man from each of their fathers' tribes, every one a leader among them. So you're going to take the leaders among your tribes, 12 tribes, send them in to this land. So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran, and at the command of the Eternal, all of them men who were heads of the sons of Israel. They were leaders, leaders, not just anybody, leaders. These were the names. Now listen to this in verse 4, verse 5, verse 6. This is Numbers chapter 13, verse 7, verse 8, verse 9, verse 10, verse 11, verse 12, verse 13, verse 14. And verse 15, there are the names of the people from each tribe who were chosen. Their names have gone down in the history of Scripture. Their names are written here, some of them to their glory and some of them to their ignominy, their shame, their disgrace. So verse 16, these are the names of the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land, but Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Joshua. His name was Joshua. Joshua was one of them. Caleb was another one. When Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, he sent them, go there into the Negev, then go up into the hill country. See what the land is like. Now here are the instructions. See what the land is like. Whether the people who live there are strong or weak. Whether they are few or many, take a look, give us an idea, spy it out. How is the land in which we live, in which they live? How? Check out the land itself. How is it? Is it a good land? Is it bad? And how are the cities in which they live? Are they open camps or are they fortified? I want you to check the cities out. How is the land? Is it fat or lean? What's that mean? Fat, abundant, or lean? You know, just scarce. You know, the chickens are just skinny, and you know, the cows can't get it. You know, there are places where the land is lean. The land itself is lean. The animals on it are lean. They're not rich. They're not abundant. They're not fed well. They're not. It depends on the soil. Are the trees in it? Are there trees or not? Make an effort then to get some of the fruit of the land. Bring an example by. Now, listen to what this statement in verse 20. Now, the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. So you're moving into harvest time. First ripe grapes. Here they were on the edge of the land of promise. At the time of the harvest time, probably close to the Feast of Tabernacles, probably. And they're going to move into this land. So they went up and they spied out the land, the wilderness of Sin. And verse 22, when they had gone into the Negev, they came into Hebron, where these different descendants of the Anak were. And now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. Then they came to the valley of Estrel, and from there they cut down a branch with a single cluster of grapes, and they carried it on a pole between two men. You have this giant cluster of grapes. Was this a rich land? Was the fruit great? Yes. And with them they took the pomegranates, and they took some pomegranates and figs. And the place was called the Valley of Eshcol. Because the cluster which the men cut down from there, it was just abundant. When they returned from the spying the land, at the end of 40 days, they were in the land 40 days. Get a good look at it. Walk around, see what's going on. They proceeded to come to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the sons of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. And they brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Now here's the kind of fruit this land produces. This is the kind of grapes they produce. Thus they told him and said, "We went to the land where you sent us, and it certainly does flow with milk and honey, that's for sure. And this is its fruit." Take a look at this. This is beautiful. Now, man, that's great. This is what this the kind of fruit this land grows, and it is a land flowing with milk and honey. Nevertheless, there's always an obstacle. You ever notice that? I don't care what you want to do. There's an obstacle. If you focus enough on the obstacle, you'll never do anything. Anything. Okay? Put it up there. Anything. You'll never do anything if you focus enough on the obstacle. Because there is always an obstacle. I don't care what it is you want to do. There will be something there. You have plans for a big idea. You want to do something. There will always be an obstacle. Okay. Do you want to clean your garage? There's an obstacle. You want to paint your house? There's an obstacle. You want to fix your car? There's an obstacle. Whatever you want to do, I don't care what it is you want to do. You want to write an article? There's an obstacle. You want to do this? I don't care what it is you want to do. You want to learn a new musical instrument? There's an obstacle. There's always an obstacle. If you focus enough on the obstacle, you'll never do anything. Nevertheless, the people who live in the land, he says, okay, but yeah, the fruit is great, the milk is good, the honey is good, it's a great land, it produces wonderful fruit, but nevertheless, the people who live in the land, they're strong. The cities are fortified, and they're very large. And moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. They're big people, they're really tall, they're very tough, they're big and strong. Amalek is living in the land of the Negev. The Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites are living in the hill country, and the Canaanites are living by the sea and by the side of the Jordan. I mean, they're all over the place, these different tribes. They're all over the place. Now, they're making this report in front of Moses, in front of some of the other major leaders of the people, and they're going, wow, oh boy, this is not easy. This is not good. But Caleb, verse 30, that's why he got to go into the land. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "We should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we will surely overcome it." And we will surely overcome whatever it is. I don't care. It's going to be tough, but let's go and get it. There's no easy thing. I don't care what it is. You want to pick fruit? You got to climb up there. There's always an obstacle. Caleb says, "Let's go." But the men who had gone up with him said, We are not able to go up against this people, for they are too strong for us." Now these are the people that saw the Red Sea open up. These are the people that saw God defeat Egypt. These are the people that saw that, and now they look and they see the obstacle and they see no way around this. We can't do it. We just can't do it. So they say, no. So they gave out to the sons of men. Now they start. Here's what they start doing. They gave out to the sons of Israel a bad. The Hebrew is actually says it's almost evil. It's not just bad. It was evil. It's an evil, bad report of the land, which they spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone in spying it out is a land." Listen how what they did. Not only did they say that these people were big. Well, that's true. They were big people. Yeah, it's true. They were fortified cities. That's true. They were large cities. That's true that you had Canaanites here and then had Jebusites there and this one there. And that's true. But listen what they said. They added to it. The land through which we have gone in spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom we saw in it are of great size. It devours its inhabitants. Well, now, wait a second. That's contradictory. If it devoured its inhabitants, where? How come there are so many people there? If it's devoured its inhabitants, how come these people grew so tall? And you know, it doesn't make sense. Then we saw the Nephilim. They're there. The sons of Anak are there. And we would become grasshoppers in our own sight just looking at them. And so we were in their sight. Chapter 14, then all the people said, you know, they lifted up their voices. Oh, no, this is it. We can't go. This is it. You brought us all the way here. We're on the edge of it. And it's too strong. We can't do it. All the men of Israel grumbled, verse 2 of chapter 14 of Numbers, against Moses, against Aaron, against the whole congregation. Would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in the wilderness. You know, wish we had just died on our way to here. Why is the Eternal bringing us up to the land so that we can fall by the sword? Our wives and our little kids will become plunder. Would it not have been better for us to return to Egypt? Maybe we should just go back. Maybe we can find our way back. So they said to one another, let's appoint a leader and return to Egypt. Now here's Moses and Aaron. They just can't believe it. They just fell on their faces in the presence of the congregation assembly and say, you know, the sons of Israel, Joshua, the son of Nun, you know, is there. And, you know, he said he was one. Caleb spied out the land. They tore their clothes. What are you talking about? We're going to go back to Egypt. And they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel. The land which we pass through today, despite that, it's a great land. It's a very good land, exceedingly good, says verse 7, Numbers 14. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will bring us into this land and give it to us. You know, he already knows it flows with milk and honey. It's just great. Only do not rebel against the Eternal. Do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. These two people they remembered the miracles. They remember what God can do. They knew what God can do. So they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Eternal is with us. Don't fear. Don't be afraid of them. You saw we read a song. Do not be afraid. Don't be afraid of them. But all the congregation said, get out of the way. We're going to stone you with stones. They're about ready. They're picking up stones to stone Moses. I mean, oh, this, here you have Moses. You have Aaron. You have Joshua. You have Caleb. You have four guys against all these people. And they're going to stone them. And then the glory of the Eternal appeared in the tent of meeting and all the sons to the sons of Israel. And finally, God says, that's it. How long do I have to put up with this people? How long? I'm just going to smite them with a pestilence. I'm going to destroy them. Moses says, please, Lord, don't do that. You know, now you have anthropomorphic conversation here. You know, you don't talk to God like this in a sense. Like, oh, you have to remind God. Now, you know, God, if you kill them, each Egyptian is going to say you couldn't do it. You know, this is the way we think, and it's then so that you get it. But this is really, you know, you don't think God knows what's going on. But Moses did, appealed for the people. He appealed, you know. Moses said to the Eternal, the Egyptians will hear of it, and for by your strength you have brought us up, and they will tell it, and they'll say the inhabitants of land, and the Eternal couldn't do it. He couldn't bring them. Oh, Eternal, your eye has seen, you know, the cloud stands over there. We've seen this. Now, if you slay, in verse 15, if you slay this people as one man, then the nations will have heard it, and your fame will say it, you know, because the Eternal could not bring the people into the land. So God changed his mind. And then he reminded God, verse 18, the Eternal is slow to anger, abundant in loving kindness, forgiving iniquity and transgression, but he will by no means clear the guilty. You know, visiting the iniquity on the fathers to the third and fourth generation. Pardon, I pray you, verse 19, the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of your loving kindness. Please, God, forgive them, in verse 19, Numbers 14. And just as you have forgiven this people from Egypt even until now, forgive them one more time. So the Eternal said, I have pardoned them according to your word. But indeed as I live, all the earth will be filled with the glory of the eternal. Surely all the men who have seen my glory and my signs, meaning miracles, my signs, miracles, which I performed in Egypt and in the wilderness, yet have put me to the test these 10 times and have not listened to my voice. That's major. Imagine that. Have not listened to my voice, the voice of God. They wouldn't remember when God was at Mount Sinai. They wouldn't listen to it. You know, don't. I don't want to not hear it anymore. Shall by no means see the land which I swore to their fathers, nor shall those who spurn me see it. But my servant Caleb, because he has had different spirit and has followed me fully, I will bring him into the land which he entered, and his descendants shall take possession of it. Now the Amalekites and the Canaanites live in the valleys. Turn tomorrow and set out to the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. The Eternal spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation who are grumbling against me? I have heard the complaints, the sons of Israel, which they are making against me. Say to them, as I live, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will surely do to you. Your corpses will fall in the wilderness. You're not going to go in now. You're going to die. You're going to stay out of that land for so long. Even all the numbered men, according to your complete number, from 20 years old and upward, who have grumbled against me, surely you shall not come into the land which I swore to settle you, except Caleb, the son of Nun, and Joshua. That's it. Your children, however, whom you said would become a prey, I will bring them in. They'll know the land which you have rejected. Your kids are going to get it. You're not going to get it. But as for you, your corpses will fall in the wilderness. Your sons shall be shepherds for 40 years in the wilderness. Now, what were they going to do in the wilderness? 40 years. Anybody 20 and above. Now, being in the wilderness is a tough life. It's a tough life. But they're going to be shepherds. And well, you're going to keep your animals along because you want to eat some meat. You're going to have some money, but you're going to have the manna. You remember where they're going to be fed with manna. You can't grow any vegetables in the wilderness. You can't grow any fruits. You can't grow anything. You're not going to have that. You're going to have the manna, and you're going to have your animals. You can drink the milk of cows, milk of sheep, the milk of goats. You can eat some milk. You can eat the meat. But you can't build anything. And you're going to keep moving. So you don't have any time to set up a community. You don't have any time to set up housing. You don't have any time. You're in the wilderness. They're not the great, you're in the desert areas. Yeah, your sons shall be shepherds for 40 years in the wilderness, and they will suffer your unfaithfulness until your corpses die or lie in the wilderness. According to the number of days which you spied out the land, each day for a year, you will bear your guilt even 40 years, and you will know my opposition. Now, I, the Eternal, have spoken. Surely I will do it. This evil congregation that will gather together against me, this is what's going to happen. And they will be destroyed, and there they will die. As for the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land, who returned and made the congregation grumble against him by bringing out a bad report concerning him, even those men who brought out that very report of the land died by plague before the Eternal. God just killed them. Just killed them. Now here's a mental state. If you are told something ahead of time, I'm walking down and I see a lake. I've got a fishing pole. I've got my tackle. I've got my lures and I've got my bait. And I want to go fishing, and somebody comes up and says, there's no fish in there. There's no use to fishing. Oh, okay. Well, once I get it in my head that there's no use, there's no fish there, I'll turn around, because that person gives me a report. Now, some people will override that and go, well, I'll see for myself. But most people, let me put it this way. I don't know what you believe completely in every phase of your life, but I will bet you that what you believe is not based on your own experiences that much. That what you believe is what you have read, is what you have heard from others, is what somebody told you. Because most of the knowledge we have in our heads, it didn't come from the experience. Most of the knowledge we have had comes from things we have read, things we have heard, what other people have told us. That sets up your mind. In psychology, we call it front-loading. Front-loading the client. Now, what do we mean by front-loading? If you go to a person and you say, this is my problem, and the person, oh boy, you, this is really tough. This is going to be a really big problem. Got a really tough problem. This is going to be hard to overcome. This is going to be terrible, really hard. Then right away, the person begins to see their problems as gigantic. If you come to a person, the person says, oh, okay, yeah, this is not unusual. This can be overcome. There are people who have done this. And you give them, it's a form of hope. A form of hope. If you have no hope, there's no use throwing in the line into a lake if you have no hope of getting a fish. There's no hope. So what these people did by giving this bad report, oh, this is a land that devours its inhabitants. We can't do it. There's no way to go in there. We're going to die. And these reporters, these people who had spied these others, except for Joshua and Caleb, forgetting about God, forgetting God's miracles, having absolutely no faith, decided, nope, we're not going in. We can't go in. We can't go in. They're going to kill us. They're going to kill our kids. We're going to kill. And so God says, okay, you're not going in. So even those men die by a plague. But Joshua, son of Nun, remained alive out of the men who were sent out to spy. When Moses spoke these words to the congregation, okay, then the sons of Israel mourned greatly. Oh, no, we're going to die. You're not going in. No, you're not going to get it now. Your sons are going to get it. Okay? However, they rose up early. They went to the ridge of the hill country. Here we are. We have indeed sinned. We will go up to the place which the Eternal had promised. Now, all of a sudden, they changed their minds. You want it? We want you to have it. Go in and get it. No, it's too much. It's too much. Okay, you can't have it. Oh, I want it. It's human nature. The minute you can't have it, we want what we can't have. We don't want what we can have. If we have it, we don't want it. If we don't have it, that's what we want. This is the kind of idea that gets in people's heads. It's a study in psychology in the mental world, okay? So now we want it. Here we are. We have indeed sinned. We will go up to the place. But now Moses says, verse 41, why are you now transgressing the commandment of the Eternal? You will not succeed now. God said, no, you're not going into the land. Oh, we're right here. Why can't we just go? Why can't we just get it? We're right here. Why don't we turn around and go back in the wilderness and die? No, we want it. So Moses says, verse 42, do not go up or you will be struck down by your enemies. For the Eternal is not among you now. You can't do it. For the Amalekites, the Canaanites will be there in front of you. You will fall by the sword as much as you have turned your back from following the Eternal. The Eternal will not be with you. But guess what they did? Going up. They went up heedlessly to the ridge of the hill country. Neither the Ark nor the Covenant of the Eternal nor the Moses left the camp. So we're not going with you. There are a bunch of people. Oh, so we can get it now. It's really good. It is really good. Now we want it now. Then the Amalekites, the Canaanites who lived in that land, came down, struck them, beat them down as far as Hormah. So it's a lesson. They could have had it. They could have had it at harvest time. They don't get it. What happened to them then? What happened to them? Here's what, so they wanted to go in, and this is what Moses said in Deuteronomy, recapping this whole thing. This is Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 41. Then you said to me, we have sinned against the Eternal. We will indeed go up and fight just as the Eternal, our God, commanded us. And every man of you girded on his weapons of war and regarded it as easy to go up to the hill country. And the Eternal said to me, say to them, do not go up nor fight, for I am not among you. Otherwise, you will be defeated by your enemies. So I spoke to you, and you would not listen. Okay, here's the deal. They would not listen when God said, go in and get it. They would not listen when God said, don't go in and get it. They just don't listen to God. Don't go up and fight, but you would not listen. Instead, you rebelled against the command of the Eternal. You acted presumptuously. You went up to the hill country. The Amalekites who lived in that hill country came out against you and chased you out as bees do and crushed you from Seir to Hormah. Then you returned and wept before the Eternal, but the Eternal will not listen to your voice nor give ear to you. You didn't do it at the right time. You know, in my experience in life, when you pass up opportunities, here's an opportunity. Well, it's going to take, you know, there's always an obstacle. The opportunities, you can say opportunity, obstacle. They go right in hand. There's an opportunity, but there's always an obstacle to an opportunity. When you pass up opportunities, they often don't come back. It's gone. Try to get, because the opportunity has to be opportune time, the right time. It's got to be the right thing at the right time. Timing is also a factor. People who pass it up often don't get it back. And then try to get it at another time when it's not an opportune time, and you go belly up, you go down the drain, you don't get it. We will continue. I'm going to show you exactly what happened to these people. They didn't go into the land. They could have gone in at fall, at the harvest time. When did they go in? They went in the spring. I'm going to show you all the factors that changed the way they were and why there was so much trouble in Israel as a result of this major, major rebellion against God.